Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how are you doing on this fine day?
I'm good. We're recording on a Friday for once, which is very rare. I'm in a weekend vibe. I'm in a weekend mood. I'm vibing weekend off the weekend, vibe. Brother.
What are you doing this weekend?
What am I doing this weekend? Going to go out for a few drinks tonight with some friends I haven't seen in a little while. And then Saturday, I might go and watch that. Is it Tenet or Tenet?
Tenet.
The film from Christopher Nolan. Yeah, looking forward to that. Very exciting. Yeah.
Once again, you've got a film about 1 month before I do. I hate you. Every time a film comes out, it happens and it sucks. It's coming out September.
How are the Japanese dealing with socially distanced cinemas and stuff? Are they doing drive-ins and things?
What they've done, I think, is they've just opened up cinemas and they've just been running old films. Like, for example, because Tenet was delayed a few months, I think it was coming out in July originally, they just played Inception, another Christopher Nolan film, great film, right. Instead.
And the Prestige.
basically just a portfolio of a backlog of Nolan's content. I'm very envious, though. I do want to see Tenet quite a lot. It's the only film in the next few months.
It's the only film out, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's ridiculous. But I'd love to go and see it. So I'm quite envious once more. I think it's coming out September 19th here. So I hate you. I hate you.
That's all right, mate. That's fine.
At the same time.
Interesting times.
You say you're going out with friends this weekend. I can't help but wonder, are you going to go out and assassinate some people? Because I saw a video of you today on your Twitter, Rainbow Six Siege UK. It's some sort of video promoting Rainbow Six. And you look rather dashing. Oh, I haven't seen a photo of you in 2 or 3 months. You've got this swanky beard going on. Your hair's really short and blonde. And it's got a bit of a kind of an assassin vibe going on, like a Russian hitman.
Look.
And it works. It works. At my
age, I will take any props, mad props, and even if it has to come from you, Chris, I'll take it, and I thank you for it, and I put it in a little box next to my heart, where all
sexy
my
Colonel,
compliments live.
Sexy Colonel Sanders. That's what you
are. Do not throw me into the Dotonbori River next time in Osaka, please. I do not belong in there. I'm not a strong swimmer.
I'm not so sure about that. I must admit, I do owe an apology not only to you, but to our beloved listeners. In the podcast on Wednesday, I said the new video was a 4K video. But straight after the podcast, I went to upload the video. I started rendering it in 4K, and it was like, this video will take 3 days to render. And I was like, ah, crap. And so I had to revert to 1080p,
Chris,
so I apologise.
Come on now. Look, you're in a situation where there's a lot of people in lockdown and they're all baking bread. They've got their sourdough starters, etc. And it takes a little while. You got a little bit impatient. You wanted everyone to see your art early. But you just got to let that slow cooker cook. That's all I'm saying. Were you rendering on your laptop or your iMac?
I was rendering on my laptop because I was off seeing Natsuki and in a hotel room. I nearly did. This is how desperate I was to render it in 4K. I nearly brought my entire iMac from my apartment to a little hotel room in Yamagata. in hindsight, I'm glad I didn't. And anyway, it wasn't a video that demanded 4K anyway. But what I like is I sent you a little preview video. I sent you a preview right beforehand, and I told you that was 4K. And you talked about how brilliant it was and how great and sharp and clear the image was because it was 4K. But actually, it was 1080p. I just realised.
1080p. So
you're lying.
Again, at my age, my eyes deceive me constantly. I'm thinking things are clearer than they actually are. So what's been going on in Japan? You've been to see Natsuki. What's happening in the news? Exciting. Apparently, I've been hearing that expats are allowed to leave and then come back again if they do all of their 14-day quarantining and testing art nonsense.
It's a groundbreaking concept, Pete. The concept of being able to leave Japan and return. I've forgotten what that feels like because we haven't had that since, I think, March now. Literally just about 10 minutes before we start recording, I saw on the news that all Japan's foreign residents can now travel in and out from September. Thank God. Finally, this policy that nearly every foreigner I've spoken to in Japan has been angry about, including myself, has finally... They've let it go. They've let it drop. We now feel like normal citizens, which is, I think, a good move. And it was widely criticized, unsurprisingly. And I think Japan was the only country to do such a policy, to be honest.
Yeah.
Sent a shudder down the spine of many people that have made their lives here. You know, you feel like a second-class citizen all of a sudden, paying taxes, being part of the country and the economy, and then you don't get the same rights. It's all a bit uncomfortable. But now, yes, we can return. The only caveat is if I did go back to the UK to go and see you and give you the Kit Kats you deserve, I would have to do a 14-day quarantine upon arriving in Japan. And I think to do that, you have to stay in some sort of hotel near Narita Airport and pay unfathomable sums of money. Or I think if you drive to the airport in your own car and you drive back to your apartment in your own car, then that is all right as well. It's a weird policy. I guess the idea being you don't spread it if you're in your car. But
but
step in the right direction.
I mean, people are coming in and out of the airport, for crying out loud, just to work. People work in the bureau de changes and the shops and stuff. So yeah, it's really disappointing the way that it was not only conceived, because it is just, let's face it, just racism. Like there's no, like the Japanese can come and go as they like, and the people who actually live there can't. And you know, Japan and Tokyo in particular set themselves up as an international kind of like banking hub, and you know, people come to do business all the time, and it will lose some standing because you know these things will happen again. These diseases will come around, and if every time that's going to happen, you're just going to treat everyone who lives there as and works there as second class citizens. It's a bit of a joke, to be honest, and the economy will shrink, and it's an economy that's based very much around foreign workers because they just don't have enough people to fill all those jobs.
And the country's become incredibly reliant on tourism in the last few years as well. Now, it's not been a good year, and it was a very bad move. And yeah, you're right. A lot of friends who work in business here are kind of eyeing up Hong Kong, Singapore, other countries and other cities that are more attractive and don't have these kind of bizarre discriminatory rules in place. Hopefully it won't happen again. Hopefully they've learned from this, though. I suppose it's not your average situation. But anyway, not so great. And I guess that's also to do with the kind of the government's quite nationalistic in Japan. It's quite right-wing at the moment. But we'll get onto the government in a moment because there's also some big news revolving around the government and revolving around the Prime Minister, Shinzo Abe. But before that, we like to kick off these podcasts with Story of the Week, our new segment that we made up about 3 weeks ago. And basically, we just read out a story from one of you guys, a story from your time in Japan, something you've done, something interesting. And we've got a story from a chap called Dave from Brisbane. And the story revolves around a rather dodgy politician's cheap PR stunt. It says, "Good day, Chris and Pete. Love the podcast. Helps keep these long days in isolation entertaining. I wanted to share my tale of my last visit to Japan in April 2019. My friend and I were staying in Ikebukuro in Tokyo near Oyama Station, which is a nice long shopping street situated by the station. On our first day, my friend and I thought we'd explore around Ikebukuro and to locate some interesting shops and places to eat. For when we came back on our long days of exploring Tokyo. We happened to be in Japan just before what seemed to be a local election, as we noticed a lot of posters around the streets, and every day at the shopping street there were three groups of people waving different coloured ribbons around, yelling and handing out flyers. Our favourite part was that they were all completely different people. One was a nice, well-dressed woman in a full pink dress suit, a normal-looking Japanese businessman, and a man in a karate outfit." Brilliant. Karate outfit. We were standing around eating our breakfast from Lawson's when the Japanese businessman approached us with this kind of unusual, which is unusual given that I'm a big man and Japanese people tend to avoid me. He started talking to us in broken English, asking us where we're from and how long we're in Japan for. While this was happening, I noticed one of the helpers had started to film us on his phone, which distracted me in time to miss what I assumed to be a joke from the businessman, in which I gave a somewhat awkward laugh. The businessman laughed and then smacked me in the belly and offered to shake my hand, which I took whilst winded, and I managed to shake his hand and laughed before he bowed and walked away. Is this normal for Japanese politicians? We thought it might be so they can boast about their English skills to score some points with the public and get these little scenes filmed. Have either of you ever had any weird run-ins with politicians or people campaigning for politicians in Japan? Cheers, Dave from Brisbane. I love that. Smacked in the stomach.
Slapped in the stomach.
Vote for me. Punch in the stomach.
I'm surprised he didn't challenge him to some kind of arm wrestling match. Very enjoyable.
Arm wrestler victory. I've noticed this though. People in Japan do seem to secretly film you on their iPhones quite a lot when you're interacting with people. I've noticed this before a few times. Do you remember the biscuit lady from Journey Across Japan who gave me like
biscuits? Yes, I remember the biscuit lady. Yeah.
And I was sneakily filming her myself. But she was also sneakily filming me. She had her iPhone out in this, and it was, she was trying to conceal the fact that she was filming me, even though she was
clearly filming,
doing a terrible job. Biscuits in one hand, iPhone in the other. But the politician just wanted to look good, right? What happened here is the politician probably wanted some like B-roll, some nice cutaway shots of them being like, oh yeah, and I'm great with the foreigners, and just have a shot of Dave from Brisbane just standing by Ikebukuro Station being punched in the stomach just to show this cultural understanding. I remember I made a video for a politician a couple of years back in Sendai, and it was a friend of Ryotaro that was running for a big position, and I had to kind of film him doing all these things like sitting at like a play school talking to the mothers and having kind of awkward conversation, and it all was very staged. So I'm not surprised by that. It's fascinating stuff. But if you find yourself in Ikebukuro, who knows, maybe get punched in the stomach, get filmed for a politician. Standard procedure. Dodgy PR.
Yeah, I've never sort of seen anybody sort of chatting to people who aren't sort of Japanese. You always see them in those big white vans sort of tearing around.
The
loud white vans.
Have you ever been here when there's like some sort of vote going on? Because they do drive around like housing estates and busy streets, and there's like five or six people crammed into like a Scooby, the Scooby mobile thing? What's it called?
I can't remember now. I used to hate Scooby.
Scooby wagon?
Machine or something? It had some stupid
mystery
name
machine.
Like that.
That is it.
Druggy little name.
Interestingly. Yeah. That phrase just triggered Siri in my ears. And
oh, really? Brilliant.
Yeah. What is going on?
The mystery machine, right.
The mystery machine. It's like that. They're all crammed in and they all shout, vote for Sato, vote for Mr. Sato. And they wave with gloves and it's really creepy and weird. The amount of people they stuff into those vans, like, it's horrific. And
it's obscene.
It's just the worst thing. Well, it's just horrible sitting in your apartment, having a nice sit down on your chair, reading a book, and then all of a sudden, Sato-san, sugoi desu, vote for fucking Sato-san. And it just won't stop. And it goes on for weeks at a time. And anyone living in Japan will testify that it's just a horrific experience that should be banned. Mm. But while we're on the subject of politicians, big news this week. As you might have heard on Wednesday, Shinzo Abe went to hospital for his condition. He does have ulcerative colitis, a kind of disease of the intestines, and he's had it for years, but it's come back with a vengeance. And as a result, he is stepping down after the longest tenure of any Japanese prime minister. He's been going on for about 2,886 days now across two terms, one that started off in 2006 to 2007, and then he kicked off again in 2012, I think. So he's had a pretty long run. He's had a very long run. Mm. And he's left something of a legacy of not really doing a whole lot, despite being in power for so long. He's been pretty unpopular the entire time. And it's not been a great premiership. The only good thing I'd say, and most people testify to, is that before Shinzo Abe came into power for the second time, there was a revolving door of Japanese prime ministers, and like every year there was a new one, and it led to some really bad political instability. So that's the only good thing he's done, I think, that he's kind of been around long enough to promote Japan's agenda on the world stage and actually mix with other kind of diplomats. He's second only to Angela Merkel in terms of the longest serving leader on the G7. But yeah, I don't think many people will miss him though. What are your thoughts on Shinzo Abe, Pete? I'm sure you're a fan.
Well, I mean, I'm not a big fan of hawkish men who think that their people hawkish are men. Somehow more exceptional than anyone else in a kind of xenophobic and jingoistic manner. But he certainly had a very, very long run. I don't really know how the Japanese parliament works, but it does seem like he was very big on sort of pivoting. He obviously inherited a shrinking economy, and he's not really done anything to arrest that particular slide. However much he tries to lock the country down and make people have little staycations, so to speak. But certainly on the tourism side. But yeah, no, it just sounds like he is bloody exhausted and very, very unwell. It's not a nice condition that to have. So my heart goes out to anyone who has that condition, but it doesn't look like anyone's, like you said, going to miss him.
No, I don't think so. I mean, he's getting on a fair bit now. He's 65 years old and he's been in this role for such a while. He had lots of like policies he wanted to instigate over the years. Like my early memories of living in Japan, when he first came to power in December, sorry, came to power the second time for his longest reign in December 2012. And every day on the news, it was like, oh, Shinzo Abe's going to change things. He's going to make it better. He's got this new economic policy they called Abenomics. It's clever. Shinzo Abe meets economics, Abenomics. And the idea was to do some sort of structural reforms to create new avenues for growth and kickstart the economy. But instead, nothing of value happened. And it was just a big PR stunt where nothing really occurred. Like, he was trying to empower women and trying to create an environment of gender equality. That didn't happen or that didn't work. And he's just not really done a whole lot. And also to try and get some of the islands back from the Russians. The end of World War II, the Russians seized the Kuril Islands just off the northeast of Hokkaido. There's a chain of islands, and sneakily the Russians seized them just before World War II was wrapping up, and they've held on to them ever since. And Shinzo Abe tried to get them back. He kept meeting with Vladimir Putin over the last 8 years, and Vladimir Putin was like, yeah, we might give them back. We don't know yet. He's kind of just been swinging them along for like 8 years and trying to keep Abe in his pocket. But Abe got nothing out of it, so that was a shame. But that's the end of Abe's reign.
What a huge, like, I mean, it's a legacy of sorts, but what an incredible, I mean, it takes a certain kind of politician to be able to stay in power for that length of time. But then you all sort of think, well, maybe the opposition isn't that good. Again, I don't know a huge amount about Japanese politics, but.
Well, the problem is Japan doesn't really have an opposition. And that is the main reason. The main party is the LDP, of which Shinzo Abe is the prime minister and the head of. And they've pretty much been in power since the end of World War II. And the rivals, who are, I think, the Democratic Party of Japan, they've just done nothing. They came into power, I think, twice. Once in the early 90s, when the bubble burst and Japan's economy went really badly. They took over then. Then they lost a few years later. And then when Shinzo Abe finished his kind of took leave in 2007 because of his first case of this disease, they came into power then, and then that led to the revolving doors of prime ministers. There's just not much leadership. So yeah, the LDP, the main part of Japan, have had a pretty easy ride the last few years. So that's kind of one reason. More worryingly though, is who's going to take over from him. Have you heard of Taro Aso at all?
I've not, no. Not heard of him.
I think we've talked about him, but maybe haven't remembered his name over the years. This is a chap who makes blunders like every Tuesday. He'll say something really stupid. He's the Minister of Finance. He's 79 years old. And he's currently the Deputy Prime Minister. And he's been part of Shinzo Abe's administration for a few years now. And he has a reputation of just making so many gaffes. He's the grandson of a former prime minister himself, and he likes manga comic books, but he's just got so many ridiculous quotes that I came across an article just before we started this podcast today, an article called The Seven Make that 8. Most ridiculous statements of Taro Aso, Japan's debonair gaffe machine. That's from Quartz. And some of the quotes include, on the expense of elderly care, he says, the problem won't be solved unless you let them hurry up and die. Just
he's not wrong.
Advocate.
He's not wrong.
The death of the elderly. Another quote on parenting. He says, I respect the kindergarten director who said the people who should... who said the people who should be disciplined are the mothers rather than the children. Don't know what he's well, getting at there. I think the director of a kindergarten in Japan sort of said mothers should be disciplined, and he's going along with that. And then more recently, he just said of the opposing party, they're Nazis. Nazis, all of them. Bold claims.
I mean, that is pretty much how political discourse works in most places.
Does,
Nazis! Always does. Ends with just somebody calling somebody else a Nazi.
So it'll be interesting to see how this manga-loving, gaff-loving individual will do if he does become prime minister. But he's getting on a fair bit, 79 years old.
He's 79. Real spring chickens. Real spring fucking chickens. Good. Like, I mean, yeah, you just sort of think, is there just not a Japanese sort of German, like chancellor like Angela Merkel sort of in the wings? Because it's just... you know, it's just man after man just making everything worse.
I think
hawkish man after man.
They should make Ryotaro or Natsuki the prime minister, and that will solve so many issues. I mean, at least they're both men of action.
Or your friend Yuki. Your friend Yuki. Yeah. He's pretty political, isn't he?
Yeah, he'd do good. Imagine Natsuki as the prime minister. Actually, do you remember on the, I think 2 months when we, 2 months into starting this podcast, we had Natsuki on briefly for like a 3-minute segment. And I think I asked him, what would you do if you became prime minister of Japan? And his policy, his only policy was, I'll give everyone a free jumper. And that was it. Just give everyone jumpers.
Look, that's a vote winner. That is a vote winner. I mean,
it is,
I wonder what their policy would be on smoking. I imagine they'd be very much for it.
Smoking for everyone for free in every restaurant. But don't worry, get a free jumper. And to be fair, a free jumper is better than anything Shinzo Abe's done, in my memory. But there you have it, Shinzo Abe. And we'll be
fantastic.
We'll be keeping up to date on the news in the coming weeks over who takes power and who takes over the LDP.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Football's back and we are here to laugh about it.
Hellenius in the League Cup, he was trying to like defend with his hands and he yanked his shorts down.
Straight off, see you later.
Yeah. But Hellenius got the shot away, which I thought was very professional.
Whether it's players losing their pants or managers losing their shit.
And I thought about that when you could just hear Morty shouting at Pablo Fornals. So, and then he just loses all sense of himself at the end when Fornals blazes it over. Like, oh!
Yeah. That was the noise. Oh.
The Football Rambler here every day with new episodes covering the lighter side of football.
I walked past a trophy shop at the weekend that said we're only allowing one person in at a time. Nobody wants any fucking trophies, mate. Don't worry, but there's nothing happening.
Also,
no, it's a cheat.
Null and void. Your five-a-side league is null and void. Piss off.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He went through and all you hear is,
shoo, Pablo, shoo.
finish. Oh, finish. Yeah. Pablo.
This was a Stakhanov production.
But now we turn our attention to the fax machine. What have we got this week, Mr. Donaldson, in the fax machine?
We've got a message from Ray from Australia. Hello, Ray. Hi, Chris and Pete. As you know, Sento public baths are a huge tradition in Japan. Here's my Sento story, in which you might find enjoyable. In my first weeks after moving to Osaka, I was thirsty to dive headfirst into Japanese culture. One night, I was binging anime and drinking cheap Suntory whiskey when I decided it would be a relaxing experience to end the evening with a dip in the bathhouse. So I hopped on my bicycle, a little tipsy, to the nearest public bath. After entering the sauna, an old Japanese man struck up a conversation with me in English, keen to immerse myself with new experiences and presumably in new baths. I welcomed the conversation for God knows how long, but long enough to realize that I'd become rather dizzy. I told the man I have to go, and I headed straight for the changing room, drank a Pocari Sweat and took a breather. Before long, I felt okay to get up and changed, and I left. Around 2 minutes into the ride home, my vision suddenly became completely white. The next thing I know, I wake up next to a pole in Osaka's main shopping street with a bicycle on top of me. I'd completely passed out and crashed due to dehydration and whiskey intake. As it was so late, there was no one around me, and I stumbled home walking my bike and shocked at what happened. Luckily, I was not injured, but I did learn my lesson, swearing to never spend too long talking to old Japanese men in saunas. Oh, yeah, and not to drink alcohol before entering. Ray from Australia. I mean, what a situation. What a situation.
Good God. Do you know the difference between a sento and a onsen?
Onsen? I really don't. No, no.
So onsen is like just a hot spring, and sento is like a public bathhouse.
Right.
I guess, that's pretty much the only difference.
Is that saunas?
I think. Sento are kind of more casual and less flashy. They're kind of a bit more crude.
Right.
I don't know if you saw the Kagoshima video, the last video on Journey Across Japan. I went in a kind of old traditional public bath, and that was kind of cool. It got like the nice tiles and things. But yeah,
story, so less wood, isn't it? Really, I've seen a couple of wrestling matches that have taken place in a Japanese bathhouse. The Japanese bathhouse matches, I think, were quite famous in I think it's New Japan or one of the big Japanese wrestling companies. And at one point, one of the wrestlers gets thrown through a wall and he sees a lady's boobs and gets really excited.
Where did you watch this?
I think it was online somewhere. It's a legendary Japanese match. It was one of the Wrestle Me shows that we did for Christmas, where we do like 12 little shows over Christmas, and we basically just take a match each. And it was the Japanese bathhouse matches, the legendary Japanese bathhouse matches.
That's a pretty cool setting, though. I could see that being a great place
to
do it.
Yeah, not too bad.
They're pretty fun to visit. often in the heart of a city. But this story reminds me of the time I went to, one of the first times I went to a centaur with my friend in, I think, 2013, like after being here 1 year. We sat in a hot spring, in the hot kind of water, 45 degrees Celsius, really boiling hot, for about, you know, 5-10 minutes. And by that point, you do feel a little bit faint. But he very stupidly got out and he went in the really cold pool, the plunge pool, that I know you love. And he dived into that and he was in there about 2 or 3 minutes. Then he got out and I saw him turn the corner and disappear behind the corner. But then I just saw him collapse at the corner of my eye, and to the point that just his legs were sticking out from behind the corner. And it was quite shocking just seeing him collapse face down, just blacked out because of the difference in temperature going from such a hot bath to a cold bath. So it's a bit dodgy. You've got to be careful.
You've got to take it easy.
You do. So that's my advice for any of you guys listening in, going to a public bath, as well as be careful to make sure you go in the men's public bath, because often it's only listed with kanji. Also be careful not to spend too much time in there. Well, certainly not to go into a bath after downing a few cups of cheap Suntory whiskey. It's never a good idea. We've got one from Gray from Manchester. It says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. Love the podcast and YouTube channel. Been following for a number of years. I was recently watching Chris's latest video about Google Translate, and I thought, how come the Japanese often praise an establishment but then go on to give it a low star rating? I had a look myself at some restaurants in Tokyo on Google Maps and found that the Japanese do often give 2 to 3 stars, even though they claim the food and the service were perfect. It's an odd phenomenon. Best wishes, Gray from Manchester." Absolutely spot on. I've noticed this, Gray. And if you look at like any restaurant on Google reviews, Google Translate, Google Maps, even though the reviews are like, "This was the best food I've ever had. It's a revelation. I'm coming here again with my family. 2 stars. I don't know why. It's like they're really critical in Japan. It's like they want to be specially critical. And I'm not sure why that is. Any ideas, Pete, why that might be?
Well, I don't know, like the level of presentation and the level of service you expect in Japan is very, very high. So maybe they are just being completely honest and they feel comfortable to do so behind a computer. But yeah, I think the British are very, "I'll get terrible service, I'll get a terrible haircut," and they'll ask if it's okay and I'll say, "It's beautiful, it's fantastic," or I'll give every hotel 5 stars. A lot of people don't. They sort of understand the idea that they should be providing a decent service, and a 4 is better. There's something to be. There's room to maneuver and room to go to get your 5 star. So if you review them like 3 or 4, they've always got somewhere to go. So that's probably the way that stars should work. But us Brits are crippled by our own insecurities, so we always give them 5 stars.
Crippled with insecurity. Very true. My rule of thumb, if you come in Japan, ladies and gentlemen, I would say never go in anywhere with less than 3.8 stars. If you can, keep it to 4. Keep it to 4. That's a guarantee that you're going to go somewhere actually worth visiting. We've got one here from Justin. It says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. Love the podcast. Listen while I'm supposed to be answering calls to customers every week since working at home. I have a question particularly relating to gift accepting customs in Japan, based around a story from my last and hopefully first of many trips to Japan. Myself and my missus were travelling to Japan in January 2019 for 3 weeks to see New Japan Pro Wrestling Show on January 4th in the Tokyo Dome. And while we were there, we wanted to see a few other wrestling company shows in the most famous amongst wrestling fans venue of the Korakuen Hall. The first show we went to was the All Japan Pro Wrestling, and yeah, it was amazing, an experience, and better than I expected it to be. As we cheered on the star of the show, Kento Miyahara, he sent the fans home happy after defending his title, a weird and awkward moment happened for me and my girlfriend, which I'm still haunted by all after a year, and I have no idea how I was supposed to react in the situation. Basically, an older Japanese lady and her husband tapped me on the shoulder, smiled, and gave me and my partner 2 packets of beef jerky. As Kento's music played and he left the ring, the lady tried in very broken English to ask if we enjoyed the show, which we both tried to indicate yes, with a lot of hi, and nods of the head. And then they just got up and left. Is there something I did right to be blessed with these packets of beef jerky? Is there something wrong I did for her to leave so abruptly? Please clear it up for me, lads, and thanks for the many hours of entertainment. Justin from South Wales." What is your assessment of that, Pete? Why did they get beef jerky?
Fantastic. I don't know why they got beef jerky. I've not seen a lot of beef jerky in Japan, but I've certainly been to Korakuen Hall, the home of Japanese wrestling, and it was it would mean a lot more to me now than it did back when I watched it a few years ago. But yeah, I mean it's Japanese wrestling, any wrestling show goes on for 4 or 5 hours, so you can come in for like the afternoon session or the evening session. Or just the main event. And I think there's different price brackets. So people do come in and go out. So it is not like, it's not like it was weird for them to leave mid-show or whatever. So yeah, what a wonderful experience though. Just get given a lot of protein. Maybe they'd prepared the protein snack for the wrestlers.
Potentially. And they just thought, oh, we've got to leave now. We've got to get the train. Just give them to the foreigners. I mean, I hope the packets were unsealed, were sealed rather.
You'd hope so.
They hadn't opened
them.
I don't know. I want to know.
Very strange.
I mean, the only thing I've ever received is cherries. So if I receive beef jerky, that would be amazing. Consider it a blessing, Justin. If anything, that is a blessing, a rare blessing.
Definitely.
yeah, I don't know what else to make from that. Just glad it was beef jerky and not something else.
Exactly. This is human flesh. We've got a final email from William from the Fax Machine, an email through a Fax Machine. Hi, Chris and Pete. I want to start by saying I love your channel and find your journey to Japan very inspiring, informative and interesting. Of course, the question I have is what type of travel is best for Japan, on your own holiday or a travel package? I took part in a Zoom call about one that lasts for 2 weeks, doing different activities in all sorts of places. And I was wondering if you think that it's best for a first trip or is it better to go somewhere like Tokyo for a few days or a week and dive straight into the traveling across Japan? Hope you're well. Yours sincerely, William. What do you reckon? A tour package or just a do-it-yourself kind of situation? What's best?
I think it's a case-by-case basis, isn't it? I know you and I don't really like tours. We like to go off our own beaten path and just do our own thing, right? But I think if you're either elderly or a little bit older and you don't really want to plan it, Japan can be a stressful place to travel, right? And if you just want a bit less hassle, then coming in a tour group can take a lot of that away. But it comes down to what kind of person you are, really. Like if my family, my parents or my gran was coming here, then I'd tell them to get a package, I think, because the idea of them walking around Japan on their own, just getting lost, would present a great deal of anxiety for me. Walking around Kyoto with Google Translate, and we've seen how Google Translate operates in last week's For Japan video. But no, I'd say it depends on who you are, William. Personally, I like the spontaneity of it all. You never know what you're going to find. Whereas with a tour, it's all written down in the pamphlet, isn't it? It's kind of like a checkbook list of things to do. But one thing I would say is maybe do an experience for a day or something. Like if you've got like a, that's something I would do. If you go like fishing or do sword fights or whatever there else, whatever experiences there are, fishing and sword fights. That's why is that the only experiences that came to mind to sum up Japan? Yeah.
Have attacking you ever done, some fish with a sword.
Have you ever done like an experience in Japan at all? One of these experiences?
No, you see them in like on the Airbnb website. Like, you know, people will take you out street, doing a bit of street photography or, you know, doing some Japanese calligraphy or stuff like that. So it's really interesting. You know, go shopping with a fashion student in around like Yoyogi Park and stuff, Harajuku. Mm. I mean, and just come back with a lot of tat you're never going to wear. So yeah, no, I've never done anything like that, but I'd like to in the future at some point. I mean, you're pretty much my tour guide, I think, so.
I am, for better or worse. I'm the one that shows you around. The only tour that I nearly signed up for once was a bicycle tour of Takayama City in Gifu in the mountains of central Japan, just because that's nice, just having a guided tour. So something like that would be nice, like a little guided tour for a day or two. For 2 weeks, though, that'd just be a bit too much, and it's pricey as well. Yeah. A lot of money.
Yeah.
But yeah, do it alone. Do some experiences and use abroadinjapan.com as your guide and the map that I've so painstakingly created that I have done so bad, such a bad job to promote. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back on Wednesday to do it all over again. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great weekend or what's left of it. And we'll see you then. Have a good one.
See you later.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.